今起きていることは恐怖に支配された生命の惨状と言える。こと切れる前はホッとするのかもな。これで自由になったって。
Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of Nerd Soup. I am Bo Oliver, soon to be joined by Aaron the Nerd Soup Monkey, and we are back to continue our review of Attack on Titan, the series finale. Originally, this was supposed to be a Patreon exclusive, but we decided to upload it to YouTube because we got a lot of good questions about the Attack on Titan finale and some other questions about other stuff happening in the world of entertainment. So we figured we'd just upload this to the YouTube channel and give everybody a chance to watch who wants to watch, because there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Attack on Titan and the series finale. So I hope you guys enjoy this, and I'll just throw it over to myself.
They've been sucker fucked.
What?
That sounds nasty, right?
Yeah.
That sounds like, you know how Zuckerberg does jujitsu now? That sounds like something he would shout out when his finishing move.
That would be funny.
Kame.
Like in the UFC, they called out all their finishing moves like an anime.
They should, dude. I mean, their moves have names, right? What was the famous Conor McGregor move that people thought he was going to pull on Floyd?
Doesn't he have
an iconic move that would have been legal in boxing?
No, I don't think so.
You don't know the fight game. I always forget you don't know the fight game. What sports do you even watch these days?
Just football, really.
Good American football. Can't let go of those commercials, huh? Those commercials still got you?
No, it's just my...
It's like, I need to see what State Farm's doing next with Cliff and Chris. I'm invested.
Man, Cliff and Chris are all dudes, man. It's all about Mahomes and Kelsey.
Oh, right. They do the bits with Andy Reid now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I have to say, big Travis Kelsey fan. The more I learn about this guy, the funnier he is.
No, yeah, his old tweets are pretty funny. Him hyped about taking naps and going to IHOP.
But is there a better way to prove to the world that you're a good person than your old tweets resurfacing and they're just all really wholesome tweets about wanting to nap and eat lunch? Because usually the old tweets resurface and it's like something terrible, like admitting to a crime thinking you're never going to be famous. Kelsey, that was like Shams. Do you remember when Shams' old tweets went viral and it's just him excited for lunch?
No, but...
He's got like 20 tweets where it's just like, lunchtime.
Well, that's what it was back in the day. It's like you're just talking to like your 10 friends that follow you. So you'd be like, oh, bored, hoping like bored, just watching movies, hoping one of them would hit you up to hang out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Nerd Soup Fan Question Podcast. Good to be back asking some fan questions, answering some fan questions from our leftover reviews. So we're probably going to sprinkle in some reviews of movies that we've been watching for the Patreon pods, because I like the Patreon pods. You know, it's just a bit more laid back. Can post them on the social medias and be like, hey, you guys are missing out. We're answering questions. We're reviewing movies. So yeah, go pledge your dollar. Aaron, thanks for joining me. How's your morning been so far?
Regular morning. Slept in a little bit. Got a bagel.
What type of bagel? Just plain?
No, I go everything bagel with veggie, cream cheese, and bacon. Yeah.
That's solid.
You don't know about that. I'm about to put you on.
Dude, I saw such a disturbing video of a pig farm and how they treat the pigs.
Yeah, they're not nice.
They keep them in these cages that are so closed in, and the pig is terrified.
Yeah, my sister's into all that, so she would just send us videos of us when we were growing up to try to get us to stop eating meat.
Well, I think I'm going to stop eating anything pig, but sorry to those chickens.
So it's okay for the chicken, but not the pig?
There's just something to the pig's emotional intelligence where I'm like, this thing is smarter than a dog. What are we doing here?
What about the cow?
Once again, how intelligent is the cow? No, I feel bad for the cow, too. I feel bad for the cow. All right, let's go to some fan questions. What the fuck are we talking about? We're going to continue answering the questions that we asked for our Attack on Titan series finale review. So it's been a long time coming, and I think most people were satisfied with what they got with the final episode, the final few chapters. So, yeah, we're going to just continue asking these questions, and we'll also sprinkle in some questions that aren't Attack on Titan related, because there are some other things to talk about as well. This question here, we'll start with a non-Attack on Titan. From Michaela, she asks if we're Marvel fans and she would love a review of Loki Season 2. Well, Michaela, yes, indeed, we are Marvel fans, some would say to a fault. I haven't seen Loki season 2. I don't have any plans to watch it. I don't know if you finished it, Aaron.
No, I watched the first two episodes. I don't remember them, so I got to rewatch them when I do go back. I hear it's good, but I mean, there's just no urgency anymore for me to watch these things. Like, even with the Marvels, like, I don't know, maybe I'll see it when I see it or just wait for Disney Plus.
I was going to go see the Marvels last week, opening weekend, and then it just sort of fell through. I had a family obligation. But yeah, I'm not someone, I even said reacting to the last couple of trailers, I thought it looked good. Obviously, the reviews weren't great, but yeah, see it when you see it type of deal. I was excited for the new Hunger Games this weekend, and then the reviews started to become a bit more negative. It's a long movie too, dude. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, look at the box office numbers. The lowest MCU opening.
Oh yeah, the Marvels, right? It's time to panic if you're Feige and the folks at Marvel, wouldn't you say? That's a bad opening for a $300 million movie.
The way they've handled the Kang thing, where it's just, it's like now
yeah, they're just kind of letting it play out.
They're going to pivot and now change Kang, but it's like, I don't know. There's so many different ways I feel like they could have dealt with that situation. And instead, they just decided to say nothing. And then casually like put things into motion where they're gonna move away from Kang. It's like, all right, I feel like as someone who's a fan is like, well, I'm just gonna wait until like I have a reason to go back and like get invested, because as of right now I just feel like it's in this purgatory where I don't see what or when it will come out of this situation. I guess once Fantastic Four and X-Men start, but we're still years away from that. In the meantime, what is there?
Yeah, the Kang situation is interesting because it feels like they could have pivoted to just making him a Loki villain. And then maybe Loki defeats him at the end of season 2 and it's not this big sprawling epic. I don't think many people are that invested in the Kang story, especially coming off of Ant-Man, Quantumania. That felt like a ramp to just escape from this continuing problem that you're going to have because of what's going on in Jonathan Majors' personal life. And also just the story itself feels like a total mess at this point, because you had the director of Shang-Chi, who was supposed to direct the Kang Dynasty. He just dropped out. So it officially doesn't have a director. Who knows when we're going to get that movie? It felt like it was going to be 2025. But at this point, I doubt it. The one thing that I think could really just pump some life back into this franchise is the idea of Blade being rated R. If that's something that they're going to continue saying, okay, we really need to switch things up here to bring audiences back in, I think that piques the interest of people who have checked out. If it comes out, it gets great reviews, I think a lot of people would come out to see it. That's the approach they need to take. But yeah, I guess we'll I don't know. It seems like they could have cut Jonathan Majors loose at this point without really hurting their franchise.
Dude, they could have recasted him.
Yeah, an easy recast.
Literally the fucking multiverse. Where you're going to have Pedro Pascal and John Krasinski play the same character. You had, you know, all these different versions of characters already established. So it's not like it's something new. You could do the same thing with Kang.
Yeah, and that Pedro Pascal is Reed Richards isn't official, but that's an interesting move. I don't love it for him in his career. Because I hate, like, look at Mahershala Ali. Dude won 2 Oscars and disappeared off the face of the earth working on this Blade movie from hell. It's going to be 5 years that he's been working on this movie. He's going to give up half a decade for a movie that may not even come out after all the turnover. And now they're saying it's going to be rated R. So we'll see. But it's been a disaster. And I hope that that's not what Pedro runs into as well. I remember just recently, when he was in the movie with directed by Pedro Almodóvar, I think that's how you say his name. Sorry if I butchered it. And he was like, listen, we need to get this guy in the hands of some good filmmakers. We're not utilizing him properly. And then he signs away to play Reed Richards, but not official. We will see. This question here from Air Synthesis. What were your thoughts on the dead end story plotline involving Historia's pregnancy? Yeah, it's weird. Kind of felt like it was going to be more important when they revealed it. And then nothing really came out of it.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that, I guess.
I've seen a lot of people defend that, saying Historia had her story in the earlier seasons when they make her the focal point, when they reveal all that information about her bloodline and who she descends from. It was a little strange. Like I said, I thought that that was going to be something that played into the ending.
Yeah. I forgot about that. And it kind of just never really went anywhere with that, huh? That's rare. I mean, I feel like the show kind of wrapped up pretty much everything else.
Yeah, we don't even see her in the finale. She's mentioned, or maybe we do see her in a flashback or something like that. Another question about the ending for a character from Dark Sister. Thoughts on how Levi's story ends? Does he seem haunted by his losses or at peace that it's over, or both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think he does find some peace at the end. I think that moment where he looks and sees all the ghosts of his former comrades, I think there's a little bit of probably some regret there, but I think it's kind of some closure for not only him, but for the people who gave their lives for this cause.
Yeah, and he's got similar thing going on, like Mikasa and Eren, between him and Erwin, where he's been so subservient to him, and he talks about how every task he gave me, I completed. The only one that's I've really struggled with is killing Zeke. But yeah, I think the person who asked the question, Dark Sister, kind of hit it on the head. There's a little bit of both there. I think he's reckoning with the fact that he's given his entire life to this cause, and it's always easier to fight. It's like what they talk about in Andor when he says, I'm fighting for a sunset I'm never going to see. And I think that's something that he sort of realizes in the end, that there was never this happy ending that we were all fighting towards. You know, we envisioned this world of freedom, but what we found is that the world is just so much more complicated than we ever could have realized. So yeah, I think there's just a lot of emotion, a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, but there is some I think pride in the way that he's carried out his duties as a member of the Scouts. And I think that yeah, when he sees all the ghosts of his former comrades, that is a way of them saying, you know, job well done, Levi, especially with you being the remaining of the old guard, the last one standing. So you did the best job you could, where he had to, you know, because Levi, as he said, he was a servant, a great servant, most powerful character in the show. But then he had to transition into being a leader. And I think he did the best job he could. You know, look at the relationship he now has with Gabby and Falco. That's very sweet. He's become Daddy Levi being pushed around in a wheelchair. Although I don't think they included the wheelchair in the finale in the animated show, right?
I think so.
Okay. Because I remember in the manga, Gabby had a big hat. I don't think she had a big hat in the animated one. I don't remember. She had a big Jesse Plemons hat.
No, yeah, he's definitely... Just that picture of him just all fucking bandaged up in the wheelchair.
So funny.
My boy's been through a lot.
This question here from Brandon. Will you guys be reviewing Invincible Season 2 episodes? P.S. Best podcast ever. Wow, thanks. I think we'll definitely do like a spoiler discussion once the 4 episodes are out. I guess the Alan episode was the last one to come out.
Yeah, was there 2 more? Or 1 more?
I think there's 1 more now.
Yeah.
Oh, that episode 4 is a fucking doozy.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be fun. I like seeing the reactions. I feel like so far, though, like not too many people are talking about it on a week to week.
No, not at all. We were wondering if they were going to be able to recapture the hype around season 1 going into season 2 and continuing week to week. But I think the wait has hurt it, definitely. And also this news about the mid-season break. You get to take off 2.5 years, give us 4 episodes, and then take another break into 2024. That is just not great marketing.
No.
This question here from a Nick. Why did everyone just forgive Annie like she didn't kill all of Levi's squad?
Well, I think we learned that, like, at a certain point, you kind of just move on, forgive and forget, given the situation. And I think a lot of it has to do with where these characters are come from, how they were brought up and what ideals they had and what they were pretty much brainwashed to do or what they were told they had to do. And there's resentment from the other side, too. Like, people like Peek, took a while for her to really get on board and on the same sides of the people from Paradise Island. So I think on both sides, there's definitely some hesitation. But when you realize the situation and kind of what really was at play here, you kind of had to put that behind you, right?
Yeah, no, dude, like just over the weekend when last week when Biden was meeting with the president of China, I thought, man, I always go back to the Reagan quote, if the Martians invaded, we would team up with the Soviet Union to stop them. And I'm like, man, does this planet need an alien invasion?
I wonder, like, how many years of just, let's say, like, if we had a decade of just unified, working together, everybody on the same page, just the advancements we could make technologically and all these other different areas.
Wouldn't that be beautiful, man? No, there was, after the Soviet Union fell, I won't get too much into this, there was a growing idea in the American establishment that, oh, we can allocate all of our military resources towards humanitarian causes because there's no looming threat out there. And then we just continued going down the path of militarism all across the world. So, yeah, no, we had a great opportunity there in the 90s and we totally blew it. No, but that's what I forget the philosopher. I think I think it was Carl Sagan when he talked about wars and just the amount of potential that we've lost from all the innocent lives, especially the innocent children that we lose. Future generations, I think, will get close to that. And it will be glorious. But yeah, for us, you know.
Pray for the Martians.
Oh, you're saying we're going to cook the Martians if they come here? Well, hopefully Iguodala will be. Did you see that meme? It was a LeBron and Wade highlight. It was like the Martians now that Iguodala retired.
Oh, man.
Fate of the universe on the line, or the Martians have the death beam pointed at Earth. You better hit it. I want Iguodala.
This question here from Max. Must an ending to a story be morally righteous to be considered great? No. I feel like that's something we discussed on the review. We were saying maybe it doesn't, you know, the ending maybe shouldn't have been morally righteous, that he was trying too hard to make it righteous.
I think the bleaker, the better in some cases.
Yeah, I think when you go down the path of a bleak ending, we all love a happy ending or bittersweet. Sometimes a bleak ending can just feel very unsatisfying because you've dedicated time to this story. And sometimes that's a reflection of reality. Obviously, not everything is going to be a happy ending. Some things are going to end. It's going to be devastating.
I was
going
to say, it almost feels like it's easier in a movie to do that, because I think there is something to 2.5 hour investment to like a 6-7 year investment, you know?
Right. Especially when it's you've put in so much time, like you said, over the years. But it's definitely an interesting question just because of the way the last few chapters leading up to the finale of Attack on Titan had been going. That, yeah, you were going to get this hero moment, but you weren't necessarily sure if it was going to succeed if you haven't read the manga. And I think there's a section of the audience that wanted things to just end as bleak as possible. And for some people, this was already too bleak. So it's interesting. People will continue to have those discussions moving forward.
Well, I think it's all in what you're, like in the case of this show, when you get to the end, after all this crazy stuff has happened, and to try to make it a happy ending or satisfying in that regard, it's almost just such a turn, because also you think to yourself, like, there's no way, how can you make this happy when you try to force it? They're not saying that's what they did in this case, but if they were trying to force it to make it wholly good, right, then that would just be such a complete 180 whiplash where it just changes on a dime and can feel forced and not flow well with the story or with what's came before it.
Yeah. This question here from Jack. Do you think any other anime can reach the heights of Attack on Titan? This seems to be a series that cuts through the mainstream. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and I was like, yo, I think One Piece is king at the very moment. And obviously, it's been around for a long, long time, and there's been millions of fans begging more people to watch it. But I think what really, really helped it was that, or it just took it over the top, because it was just already on such a tear, was the live-action Netflix show. Because now, people like my mom knows who... She knows who Luffy is, which is crazy. So I think something like that really does help it. Yeah, I think One Piece is king right now. When you talk about cutting through the mainstream, and that's just growing, because there's just so many people out there who still haven't seen it, but now they know what it is. It's sort of reaching those heights of Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, of just being household name. But yeah, Attack on Titan is definitely in those conversations as well. It's different because Attack on Titan, I think, can reach an audience that loves HBO shows, whereas One Piece is a bit more universal.
Yeah. And then, like, obviously, Dragon Ball, I think, is probably one of the, like, more popular, Naruto or Pokemon. But, like, as far as relatively newer projects to really break in, I think this is, and especially some, like you said, something a little bit more mature, a little bit more appealing to people who might not like the, you know, traditional animes that they've... What was that?
That was my anime. I was shocked.
So you're like holding back a sneeze or like got stabbed.
As a character just said something embarrassing about me.
Yeah. Damn, that just threw me off.
No, you're talking about Attack on Titan, a bit darker, a bit more thought-provoking than your average anime.
Yeah, sure. So, like, I think it does break into a different kind of demographic when it comes to that.
And the kids do love Attack on Titan, so.
I know, they do. It's,
yeah.
Maybe it is there. But I think One Piece is probably still at the top when it comes to that. Because, I mean, spanning so long. So you have just generations of fans. And now, like you said, it's a new Netflix show, just bringing in even more fans. Like, how many people like me are there that like the live action and just like, all right, I guess I'm just going to start the anime.
Right, yeah. Yeah, One Piece, obviously they're going to run into some difficulties in the later seasons, but just coming off of that first season, people are going to be so hyped for season two. And I imagine many people like you decided to watch the anime after watching that live action.
It's so funny what you said yesterday. It's like, dude, once you get to episode 700,
I know, it sounds ridiculous.
It's crazy. Well, I remember like when you were first watching Attack on Titan and I saw it on your Hulu, it was like season three, episode like 70 something. And like, I didn't know they went by how they formatted it. So I'm like, is there 75 episodes a season? I'm never watching this show.
I wish there were 75 episodes a season for Attack. This question here from Kevin: what is the most fair criticism overall for the story of Attack on Titan? And what is the most unfair criticism? I've seen criticisms. The biggest criticism I always see is that the characters suck. That's being a bit harsh, but that the development's not always there. That it's more so you're watching it for the world building and the action, and the characters are secondary.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's a little bit too harsh. So maybe it's like that's the answer for both questions. That's my answer to Kevin's questions.
Well, it's what characters? If you want to look at the big three.
Like Aaron's got like a Harry Potter problem where he's the main character, but he's just boring and one note. Same thing with Mikasa, where she started off, yeah, she was quiet, mysterious, but then she just sort of stayed that way. And that Armin, it's the same dynamic. He's like the Ron Weasley of the group, a bit smarter, obviously more clever.
Right. So
and
you can point to those.
By default, he's the best character because he's got just like the most personality.
You can point to those three, and obviously those are your three main characters. But when you look at the supporting cast, I think it's very strong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some supporting characters are stronger than others. Like Reiner has one of the best arcs in the show. But then some of the other supporting characters, you know, they're there to support. That's what you do. Not everybody needs to have a great story. But I think for the most part, they give them cool backstories and individual things to do.
Yeah. What are some, what was the other part?
Most unfair criticism and most fair.
What are some other criticisms people have?
That's always the big one I see. None really are coming to mind. I'm sure that this is something that maybe people who don't love the show can answer better. I've heard from people that I've recommended it to that it's a bit repetitive. I think that's unfair too. I mean, I love this show. My biggest criticism is just it's mostly focused on the ending, and I don't think that's unfair. And I don't think it ruins it for me whatsoever, but I've got way more problems with that final chapter than I do anything else in the series. So it's really hard for me to answer.
It insists upon itself.
It's always so funny that they can understand Stewie in that scene. For the Godfather debate, they're like, yeah, no, we need all the help we can get.
It's like they're speaking another language. They're speaking Italian.
Yeah. I love the money pit. All right, guys, before we get to the second half of this review, we're going to take a quick break and shout out our sponsor for today's episode, and that would be Uncommon Goods. If you're tired of disappointing your friends and family with terrible gifts during the holiday season, Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your secret Santa or your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. These fine products are often made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S., They have the most meaningful and out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere, and I was pleasantly surprised to see how wide-ranging their selection is. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar items, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same lackluster gifts you can find just anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date. And I am someone who likes to focus on unique and memorable gifts for the holidays, so it's been really fun scouring the Uncommon Goods website to find some stocking stuffers and gifts that people will remember. They've got all sorts of knickknacks. One item in particular that caught my eye is a portable campfire. This is going to be a gift that I give for myself, because I'm at the age where I'm just a gift giver, not a gift receiver, so you have to treat yourself every now and then. And this portable campfire is awesome. It comes completely set up. All you have to do is light it, and when you're done with it, you just put the lid on top, and it lasts for 3 to 5 hours. So you can make s'mores anywhere, right? Portable s'mores. Or you can go for something funny, like happy and sad socks. Get that special someone in your life a pair of socks. I'm sure they'll really appreciate it. So, in order to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nerdsoup. That's uncommongoods.com/nerdsoup for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We are all out of the ordinary. Oh, this is a good question here from Jazz. Any characters in the show you couldn't stand but came to appreciate? If you were Aaron's friend, how would you feel about the choices he has made?
Aaron was one that, it's weird because when he came to Genocidal Maniac, that's when I was like, all right, I see you. I fuck with you, Aaron, a little bit.
Well, everything about the character, just like the glow up, the ponytail.
Yeah, once it got hot, I was like, okay, Aaron.
Yeah, hot Aaron. Hot boy Aaron.
I guess another one's Gabby for the same reasons I didn't like Aaron, but I actually ended up really liking her. It was funny. I think there was something like, it was like a debate or something online. It's like if you hate Gabby and liked Aaron, you're sexist or something along those lines. And I'm like, well, I hated Aaron too. So whew, that was close.
You just hate people.
Out there. Yeah, I just hate everybody. I just hate when people are too... bought into something.
Yeah, I never really had an issue with any character where I didn't really like them at first and then came to like them. For the most part, I enjoyed all the characters. I always thought Aaron was just like a weak character, but not necessarily weak, but I didn't really have much love for him. I understood his purpose in the show. But then you look at other, you know, because that's an archetype that's found all across anime. So like a guy, Tanjiro in Demon Slayer, is a character I would prefer to Aaron. But Aaron's intensity, it fits this world because of what he went through. He's supposed to be a man who is on the path of becoming totally radicalized. So it just made sense for the story. But he's also kind of annoying, so I can understand why people didn't like him.
Yeah,
like it's just a lot of the same shit over the all the time.
I prefer the more, I don't know. He's way too intense for me. It's like, calm down, buddy.
Yeah, I like it when it's a Midoriya and My Hero where yes, the intensity like comes out in moments and you're like, wow, this guy's fucking nuts.
But you say like his baseline is just wholesome. And then when he has to be intense, it's a switch up. Aaron was always on, I felt like.
Yeah, that man's always ready to fight.
For no reason.
For no reason. Yeah, he's always ready to scrap. This question.
So happy when he got eaten. So happy.
This question here from Jack Franklin. Where do you think Erwin's character would stand if he was the one chosen for the Titan fluid? Would he stand with Eldia and Eren, or try to save the world with the rest of the scouts? I think Eren would have stood Erwin would have stood against Eren. He was a tough bastard, but I don't think he was down with genocide. I don't think that there's anybody in the scouts that we loved, that would justify that.
No, I feel like Hanji, him, Levi are all kind of cut from the same cloth morally.
Yeah, no genocide. Which is
like most people. Yeah, it's a huge cloth.
I wouldn't be so sure. I don't know like about that these days.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day,
he would have rationalized being against it as all this is doing is just. We're just committing a massacre for no reason because the cycle of violence is going to continue. So yeah, no, he would have, I think he would have stood against Aaron. And I also, that's what's so great about his arc, because his role was to get them to that point. Like Levi says, get them to the ocean and then that's it. So that's the destiny of that character. It's almost hard to imagine him beyond that point because it just doesn't feel necessary anymore. It'd be like having Dumbledore still alive in the 7th and 8th movies. It's up to the kids now. Dumbledore's done his job. And I think that's what makes it feel real. Because we see that all the time in real life. Oh, if only this person had been the leader of this country, and if history had gone a different way, like Bush and Al Gore, right? That's a perfect one. It's almost hard to imagine when you, you know, when you're living with the reality of what, how it went down. So it's hard to say. But I think Irwin wouldn't have been down with what Irwin was doing. Oh, this question here from Ariana. Do you think that I had no choice sentiment of the ending justifies Aaron's actions in any way?
No, we talked about it. He had no choice because he already saw that that was going, it was already laid out for him. And just because he had this omnipresence about him where he could see past, present, future up to a point, like this is the way it goes, this is the way it has to go, and tried nothing to really try to find a different path. And like we said, the whole thing, like, and at the end of the day, it really just doesn't work because the cycle continues. So there's a lot of, we talked like he's still a kid, so a lot of immaturity in that decision and a lot of optimism in a weird way where, yes, in his mind, this would make the Eldians the heroes and broker in this new peace, but that's just not the way it works out.
Yeah, and I think like when you use words like justification, that's the criticism people always throw at you when you try and understand a situation. When you want to put things in context, people always assume, oh, so you're justifying it. No, I'm just putting it in context. That's simply what I'm doing. You can be against something while also understanding why it happened. So I think when people talk about what Aaron did and they say, you know, that's sort of the point of the series, is that if you keep punching somebody, they may kick you in the balls in the form of 80% of the world being annihilated. Obviously, it's a very extreme example, but that's been the point of the writing. That's been the point of the story. And I don't think that Isayama supports killing 80% of the world, but the idea is to provide context for how conflicts can get to these points of what seems to be absolute destruction, or almost to that point of absolute destruction. And I think in the real world, we've gone up to the brink many times, you know, especially during the Cold War, where the dumbasses in the Kremlin and Washington were just itching or just always panicking over what the other side did and ready to launch a goddamn nuclear weapon. Like, you know, we talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like Kennedy was just so smart the way he maneuvered it. It was like, yo, you could have just made a call to the Kremlin and be like, we'll take our nukes out of Turkey, you take your nukes out of Cuba, instead of having to almost butt heads and get to that point. But I think when, you know, like I said, when you try to provide context to a situation, providing context to the Cuban Missile Crisis, oh, so you support the Russians?
Well, the flaw in his perspective is also that it's one-sided. He's only thinking about what people outside of Paradise Island would, how they would perceive the Eldians. And it's like, not for a second did he think about how the Eldians would react. And we see with the Aegiris kind of staying in power, a lot of them in Paradise Island. Yeah, just because Aaron took out 80% of the population, like, they're still not cool with what happened. And they're going to be standoffish. So it's right, like, yeah, right. Maybe the Marlians might be like, hey, maybe the Eldians aren't so bad. But the Eldians are still like, well, fuck you guys. We don't forget everything that happened to us.
Yeah, that's a good point. Aaron is only seeing it from his side. And that's part of the context as well. And I think that's, you know, goes back to Irwin, why he would never support that. Because Irwin's able, he would have been able to see it from both sides at that point.
Yeah, he basically installed a military state of extremists while the whole time he had ulterior motives, but never let his fucking ring of psychopaths know his ulterior motives. So maybe he was doing it for the right way, but failed to enlighten his followers on what the real point of this all is. So they were just going to run with all the crazy shit that he was promoting. So maybe next time do that. It's like you said with the fake history, like it's like if Hitler didn't attack Russia in winter, you shouldn't have done that. It's like, go back. The next time Aaron does all this, we'll give him some pointers to see if he can succeed more.
It's crazy. No matter how many times leaders fail to take over Russia, people just still try.
I always forget about the winter, man. Those are always the funniest things too. Like when you see, it's like, I think I saw it a couple weeks ago. It's like, if Hitler did these things, he would have won. It's like, did you want that? Aren't we supposed to be happy that he didn't do these things?
I know. People are obsessed with the alternate history of Hitler winning and makes me look at them funny.
Well, the show is actually pretty good. Man in the High Castle. Well, it was good for a few seasons, but...
This question here from Luis. Aaron was mainly absent from the finale, with the heroes being the primary focus. Was this the right call? Yes, it was, because I think leading up until this finale, we had gotten enough of Aaron. Not saying that it was too much, but we totally know what he's about, what he's doing, and now it's time to stop him. So I think he got an appropriate amount of screen time. I still think it's just the way the story was told. Maybe you can criticize it there, the epilogue, the way that those last 20 minutes or so just feels like a exposition dump. You know, we need to explain this to the audience because people are going to still be very, very confused and also try and redeem Aaron. So it was, I guess maybe in a way that could have been written differently, but it's one of those things that was already written in stone and they just had to adapt it.
Yeah, I don't think we needed really to. It's like once everything is happening and, you know, they're closing in, like once everything kicks off and they're kind of really closing in into those last moments, like, what really is more for Aaron to do besides kind of get what we got with the exposition dump at the end? But in those moments, it's like, yeah, this is all the buildup comes to this moment. And there's really no one for Aaron to really interact with. And like, I think we already got all of what we needed from Aaron up until that point. Like, yeah, we know there's no convincing him otherwise. We know Armin can't reach him. We know Mikasa's not going to convince him of anything. So at that point, you're kind of just beating a dead horse when it comes to having any other moments with Aaron to try to shift him one way or the other one last time.
This question here from Ben, were you guys satisfied with the explanation behind Titans and the walls? Oh yeah, more than satisfied. I guess, you know, just going back to the origin of the Titans, all the stuff with Ymir and King Fritz, you know, the creature and the ocean, something mystical and powerful about the ocean. So I do like that explanation as to the origin of the Titan power, because it still keeps it, because it's like the Big Bang. Well, what came before the Big Bang? What came before that weird creature thing that gave everybody these superpowers? And I think it was very satisfying, you know, like when you saw the Titan in the wall during Midnight Sun, during that battle. And that's, you know, that's basically guaranteeing that eventually those Titans are going to break out of that wall. So all the world building, the explanations for me was very satisfying for the most part.
Yeah, I think it worked. It worked out really well. And I think it's not really a criticism, but I think at times it did get a little confusing and you kind of forget what's what or what kind of happened to get to this point. But other than that, like once you kind of read up on some things or kind of rewatch some things and you caught up, then yeah, I think it actually does paint a really complete and interesting picture. Because there were times, like especially with some of the weights, where you kind of like, wait, why is this the way it is? Like, how did we get here? But I don't think that's really a criticism. It's just if it's there and laid out for you, then there's not really much more they can do, right?
Yeah,
I don't think there was really nothing, like there wasn't like pieces missing or anything, any leaps in logic or explanations. It's just sometimes, especially I think with reading, sometimes it's hard to, when you're trying to read the subtitles and focus on so many different things at once, you can miss something. But that's, I guess, more on the viewer.
Question here from Aiden. Why did Aaron have to kill 80% of the population? I think 5% would suffice. Interesting question, because going back to where Erwin would have fell when it comes to Aaron's plan, I think that there could have been an option, maybe Erwin convincing him, because I think that was initially the plan, right? Give the world a taste of the rumbling as a sort of deterrence. If you don't stop fucking with us, we're going to unleash this on the world type of thing. Maybe they go that route. Like, hey, like I said, give you a taste. Which is just hard. It's almost like the ending of World War II. That bombing Japan wasn't so much as wanting to defeat the Japanese, but showing the Soviets, we have this weapon now. You guys need to stay in check. So that could have been an interesting route to go. But that the extremity of it is the point. It was never going to be 5%. It was always going to be 80%.
Yeah. I think even with that, it's like,
you want to see the rumbling, man. They teased it so much. As horrifying as it is, you can't tease that and have it not get out of hand.
Well, also at a certain point, it's like 5%, like just to show you what we have as a deterrent. That kind of makes you, I think that's something where like the outside world would have more urgency and more like more justification for everything they've done, and kind of try to ramp that up more to stop the Paradise Island completely this time, even though they can't. But like I think that would just fuel more fire to like the Marlians and stuff like that. Like 80% is something where it's like, yeah, there's nothing we can do.
All right, we'll take a few more questions here because a lot of them are just sort of repeating. And we've answered a lot of them at this point. Oh, this fun question here from, I can't pronounce the name. Which Titan power are you guys taking? Aaron seems like a jaw guy. I don't know what that means, but I kind of agree with it. You do kind of seem like a jaw guy.
I don't like that.
I would definitely be the cart Titan, just based on my personality, because that was always my my big thing, stamina. I could just run forever.
Yeah, but then you're stuck giving people rides.
No, yeah, I would have everybody on my back. But if I have to give a ride to, give a ride to Mikasa, I don't mind. Where you want to go, girl? You want to go visit Eren's head? I'll give you a ride.
I think the Armored Titan is probably the coolest.
Yeah, he's a beast. When they were like, oh, he'll be able to withstand the Colossal Titan explosion.
I think the Attack Titan is pretty dope, too.
Attack Titan's cool.
Like the earlier, they're like the first initial Eren version.
Yeah, yeah.
He just got like increasingly uglier, though.
Yes, he did. He was. It just made him scarier, right? There's nothing scarier than a big, ugly beast.
Yeah, either that one or the Armored Titan. Actually, what's the what am I thinking of? Give me a second.
I think I like the Warhammer Titan as well.
Yes, that was the Warhammer.
Yeah.
That one's pretty dope.
The it is funny is that the female gross. Titan is just like female. Like, how does that power get, like, can you transfer that to a dude and it's just the male Titan?
I don't know. That is weird.
The female Titan was, when you let go based on who was the scariest, it's definitely between the female and the beast. And I think the female, when you're first introduced to her in that forest, because she's just running through these motherfuckers like bowling pins, bro. Yeah. She's causing damage.
Well, the beast is scary because it's the first one that, like, spoke.
Yeah, when he spoke, everybody's like, what the fuck?
She's like, oh, they have, like, they know what's going on. That's even scarier. If you're, intentionally right. doing this.
That's what made the show, that's such a great point, because at that, you remember so vividly where you were at when it came to, you know, how confused you were by the show. So that was just such a crazy revelation when he does speak. And like you said, you're like, oh, these aren't just mindless monsters. They're sentient. And it was creepy because he just looked so much different. Like, why is he a giant monkey? Is he the king? Is he like the Titan Monkey King? They all descend from him. That's the show was just so brilliant in that regard. Just whenever it gave you a new piece of information, you were like, wow. I think for, you know, obviously you could see some things coming, but some things you didn't. And a lot of the confirmations for maybe things that you knew were around the corner were still just very satisfying. And then there was a lot of things that you weren't expecting that happened. It was just, and like I said, it's just so vivid where none of it really blends together. You just remember how you felt in those early moments. Like even I just, season one, I'm like, yo, what is this? What are these monsters? This shit is disgusting. This is horrifying.
I'm looking at IMDb. The finale got an 8.7 out of 10.
Wow, that's low.
Not really.
Well, when you look at some of their highest rated episodes, they're in the high nines. Midnight Sun was a 9.9 for the longest time. I think it's at 9.8 now.
No, yeah, the top rated Hero, 9.8.
Yeah, I mean, it's not terrible, but it just goes to show that I think a lot of the criticisms manga readers have, some viewers of the show are having as well. Not the overwhelming majority of the audience, but it's definitely there. It's definitely present.
Yeah, they have 6 episodes at a 9.8. And then 10 of a 9.7. So yeah, the finale is like, when it comes to their best episodes, not even probably in the top 50.
All right, we'll end this question here. We'll end this pod with this question here from Jordan. We've talked about where it ranks, but I guess we'll just make it definitive. Jordan asks simply, is it top 5? So we'll keep it for animes. For me personally, is it in my top 5? I would say as of right now, it's not. But it's very close, and it could be. It could be by the end of the day, just based on how I rank them.
Top 5? Yeah, for me it is, but like...
Well, it's rounding out the 5 that you've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, in order to complete a top 10, I include, like, the 2 episodes of Jujutsu Kaisen, live-action One Piece. Like, I'm making some stretches to make a top 10.
You know, it may be five, because it's definitely Neon Genesis, Cowboy Bebop, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Those are undoubtedly in my top. And then, yeah, I think maybe, because then you have to factor in, like, Hunter x Hunter, and I think that would be in my top five as well. And then Vinland Saga and Attack on Titan. Obviously, Vinland Saga hasn't wrapped up, but I guess for now, I'll put Attack on Titan at five.
Yeah, I think I enjoy My Hero Academia more, just from the point of, like, I just have more fun watching it, like kind of like Parks and Rec, if we want to make a comp to live action. Like, Parks and Rec isn't my favorite show of all. Like, it's not like the best show I ever watched, but it's probably like one of my favorites, just in terms of just I like to watch it and have fun and
right
relax a little. And I think there are moments where it's actually really fucking good. But
no, I put the first four seasons of My Hero up against anything.
Yeah. So
I think,
like,
there's the recent seasons for me have been a bit underwhelming. But still, like I said, for the most part, it's great fun. And I think, My Hero became so, so popular that there's been a lot of pushback now, which is natural. It's like I've always said, it's like the MCU of anime. But the first four seasons to me are great. And like I said, I put it up against a lot of shows.
But I think, like, Attack on Titan, quality-wise, is a better just show.
Yeah, and like I said, it's tough to compare these. When you go top five anime, it's just putting everybody in one umbrella. And you run into some problems because it's hard to compare, like, something like Spy Family. Like, what's better, Spy Family or Attack on Titan? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really, it's one of the only, it's even hard to call it a genre because, like,
because it's not.
It's more of a medium, and the genres are, like, with every other medium within, like, movies. It's like, oh, what's your favorite genre? Oh, movies. Like, no, it's not.
Right, right.
Because there's genres within those movies. So, yeah, it's like comparing sports movies with gangster movies or shit like that. It's like, yeah, you can on a macro level, but when you really dig into it, it's really hard to compare and contrast. I mean, yeah, it's almost unfair at times.
Yeah, no, it's like saying, what's a better movie, Saving Private Ryan or The Big Lebowski? Nobody would ever have that debate. It's just so ridiculous. That's something that you would see in, like, a Teddy tournament.
Did you catch up with Vinland Saga?
No, I haven't. But everything I've heard about season two makes me think I'm going to like it, that it's very slow and that it's mostly about farming.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, but people will message me and be like, Bo, you told me to watch Vinland Saga. Love season one. Season two sucks. I'm like, oh, what's wrong with it? Like, oh, it's like a farming sim. And I'm like, wow, I need to watch season two. Sounds like something right on my alley.
Oh, it's awesome. I love both of them. Because the first one, the first season is just so great for just being this action path. But, like, there's a lot of fucking story there and a lot of things you can dive deep into. But season two is just this Bob Ross type. It's actually not all peaceful. There actually are some things, like, dark moments. But it's very, it's not as action packed. And there's, like, lots of reflection and time to think while you're watching. And I guess for some people that switch up to from season one to season two is a little jarring, but I think it's awesome. But there are moments where they're just working, they're just farming, and you're just like, hell yeah, get that harvest.
All right, that does it for our Attack on Titan fan question podcast. Thank you for everybody who listened, for everybody who pledged. We really appreciate the support, and we will continue on recording these fan question podcasts. And I think we're going to do maybe a couple of movie reviews and put those up on the Patreon so we can try to get people's dollars. But Aaron, thanks for joining me as always.
It's not a wedding on smoke Thursday, blunts so.
Oh yeah, how was that?
It was good, but my Friday felt like a Saturday. Now my Saturday feels like Sunday.
I always hate when that happens.
I don't like it.
You got double Sundays.
Damn.
That's what Teddy gets at the ice cream store. Because we're so mean to him when he's out here.
He's lost a lot of weight, man. He looks good.
No, he does. Yeah, he's fucking ripped.
Kind of pisses me off.
He looks like 11th grade Teddy. It's crazy.
Yeah, good.
All right, guys, that does it for this podcast. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Wow, that was probably our best review yet. Hey, guys, Aaron the Nerd Suit Monkey here with a brief shameless plug before we end the video.
Do you ever feel like you don't have an adequate amount of nerd soup in your life? Like you're going to bed hungry and yearning for the nonsensical yet entertaining nutrients our podcasts provide? Well, we've come up with the perfect solution. The Nerd Soup Fan Question Podcast, exclusively available to our Patreon supporters. You can sign up now by visiting patreon.com/nerdsoup, and for the price of only $1 per month, you'll receive exclusive access to our weekly podcast, where we answer your questions that don't make it to the main show. And while you're there, you can check out the other rewards we offer to our patrons, like stickers, mugs, t-shirts, behind-the-scenes footage, and appearing in the credits at the end of our videos. And that's exactly what we're going to do right now. Roll the names of the nerds who make Nerd Soup possible. The reason why the crypto crash didn't send our lives spiraling down a black hole of no return. Alright, I'll stop talking so you can listen to this jazzy-ass music while checking if Bo spelt your name wrong in the credits.